Okay, is there anyone who did not get a handout? Just raise your hand and we'll make sure you get one. Anybody else? I want you to know, Kyle, I'm not complaining. That was a wonderful lesson. But yes, there was a challenge in keeping it short. That was a lot of information to get a very short lesson, but that was a very good lesson. I enjoyed it. Thank you. So by way of quick introduction, my name is also Kyle. I'm Kyle Clayton. And I am here to talk about the work in India. This is a work that began in 1979. My father first went to India, but that was after years and years of my father having discussions with a man from India. He had been begging my father to come. And so in 1979, I was just a kid at the time, and we were living in Phoenix, Arizona. My dad was preaching at the Southwest Church there, and the elders gave him the permission to go. And that just began a long, long relationship with India. My mom made her first trip in 1980. In 1981, my parents decided the entire family was going to go to India. I'm the youngest of three boys. And so we packed up, sold almost everything we owned, packed up the last bit, and then went to India. The plan was for us to stay for 5 years. We ended up staying only 5 months. And so we came back to the States. My dad went back to local work for a few years. And then in 1985, got back into the India work full time. We moved to Birmingham, Alabama, and my oldest brother still lives there. But in 1993, after I had gotten out of high school, and during the summers, my dad was always, "Tyler, you want to go back to India?" And I was like, "Nah, not interested." I went to college for a few years and dropped out, and then went to work. Got laid off from the job I had because I have back problems, and it was a very heavy, intensive labor job, and I had no excuse. My dad was like, "Kyle, why don't you come back to India? Just spend some time." I said, "Okay, fine." I have three conditions. Number one, I'm only going to stay for 2 months, not a day longer. Number two, I'm not going to preach. Don't ask. Number three, don't try getting me married off to a young Indian girl. You see how well that worked. But I have been part of this work now almost 28 years. In that time, because having been married to Sony and living in India with the children growing up, going to school and all that, we were staying in India normally 10 months out of the year. Our youngest two, are all three of them now out of school. Our oldest went to college in India. But in 2019, all the children are now out. And so we're not bound by a school schedule anymore. We are going to be spending more time in the U.S. and less time in India, and that was our plan. COVID, however, changed a lot of things. We went back to the U.S. to India right after Christmas 2019, just when COVID was starting to be talked about here, and thinking, of course, you know, all the people here saying, "Oh, it's just going to last a few weeks." So we went, and then we got stuck there for 6 months without being able to do anything. So in July of last year, when the flight finally opened back up, we returned to the U.S. just waiting to see how things were going to play. And so we've been here now. This is Sony's longest time in the U.S. We've been here just over a year now. But I'll come back to talking about the people we work with. I want you to look at the front side of the handout, just the types of work we're involved in. And there's just it's really a short list. But there's so much involved in this list. Number one on the list is evangelism. Now, as we go about mission work, of course, evangelism has to be a first priority, and it is. But we work with people in villages. We work with people in the cities. And when I say people, I'm talking about other preachers. We did not go to India to set up a small located work with maybe a church, a school, medical clinic, and then a bunch of housing. That is what a mission technically is. Our aim over all these years has been to teach and train and work with preachers. And so our network has grown all across the country. Evangelistic efforts in the villages are very different than in the city simply because it's easier to do things in the villages than it is in the city. In Hyderabad, the city where my wife was born, the city where we live, is 18 million people. That's the whole metropolitan area. How many people live in the state of West Virginia? Yeah, exactly. So we have that in one city. And so it makes it very hard for us to get to other places within the city to do a lot of work. In the villages, we don't have that obstacle. We can go out to any village we want to. We can hold classes all day long, primarily for preachers. And then in the evenings, we will go to surrounding villages, sometimes two or three different villages in a night, and have gospel meetings. Now, when we talk about a gospel meeting, it's one night or one meeting, one place, and that's it. We will have the American who speaks, he will have a translator, then we will have somebody who will exhort. And the way we will do this to make it where we can go to multiple places, we will have somebody else who will be able to exhort. I cannot offer an invitation in India. That would be just very bad. So we have one of our Indian brethren who will do that. And while he is exhorting, we've moved off to the next place. And so we were able to kind of, leapfrog through various meetings during the night. But in the cities, as I said, it's very difficult to do such a thing. We may be able to have one meeting a night, and that this traffic lets us get there easily. So, evangelistic efforts. I'm going to skip down just a little bit to the Carl Crossell Memorial Institute of Biblical Studies. This is one of our major works. It is a Bible training school or program, but we have different formats. The first of these, as you see, is the Mobile Bible School. Brother T.J. Monikrau, who lives in the village of Tubardu in Andhra Pradesh, we have worked with him since before I went to India. And T.J. and his family have been part of our work for a long time. His father was one we converted, and then, of course, several of his, T.J. and his brothers are all preachers. But now T.J. had been the director of one of our local schools. We had one set up in Tubardu, a three-month intensive preacher training school, but there were problems with the property. And then we decided the best thing was for us just to pull out of the property. T.J. came to us and said, "Brother, if they can't come to me, let me go to them." And so now he travels several weeks out of every month, going to different locations, just teaching preachers. And he has two or three men that will travel with him in all of this time. Going next on the list, two three-month programs, one in Markapur and one in Pungalore. Now, Markapur is in it's right outside of the town of Rayavaram, and this is our oldest school, actually. But it is a three-month intensive preacher training school. The Pungalore is a newer facility. But again, the director of Markapur is Brother G. Abel. The director of Pungalore is T. Samapanarao. That's a mouthful. We call him Sammy. And both of them do great jobs. Third on the list, we now have a two-year program in the Neridkerla of Telangana State. Now, this is the closest one to Hyderabad. A. Abraham and his brother Lazar, they are the ones in charge of this, and they do just a wonderful job. It began as a three-month program. We expanded it to 6 months, then to a year, and now to 2 years. So it has undergone a lot of changes, but it is a great program. Next on the list, we have our Cape Cod Memorial Bible Institute. These are one-day-a-week Bible classes designed for preachers to come together. They learn to study and work together. They learn especially to cooperate with one another. And that is one of the keys to our work. Because what happens in India, when you go to a worship service on Sunday morning, the first place you go, it's nothing uncommon. You're going to find four or five preachers all in the one congregation. They will rotate responsibilities. And then from there, they will branch out to other congregations, often going three or four congregations on any given Sunday. And when that happens, they're not necessarily going to the same three or four congregations every week. These men, working together in the KCMBI, working together in congregations, working in multiple congregations, and they network. And they have done a great deal of cooperation in this sense. And so it's very helpful for us that they learn to work together. It's helpful for the church, and it's really helping the churches to grow in a great way. The next on the list is Haslam Fulford Memorial Preacher's Lectureship. And I had the pleasure of Sonia and I are staying with Brother Jones, who preaches at Ravenswood. We stayed with him last night. We'll be with there again tonight. It turns out my father preached for the Northside Church in St. Petersburg, Florida back in the early 1980s. Brother Jones preached for that same congregation in the early 1970s. And so we knew a lot of people in common and, you know, had to come all the way to West Virginia to find this out. But he knew Brother Charles Haslam and Fred Fulford. These are the two, they were two elders of that congregation. And these are men that we named this workshop after, this lectureship after. They were great supporters of our work. Charles Haslam, sadly, he actually passed away while we were in St. Petersburg. He had contracted malaria in Africa decades before, and it was just complications from ongoing problems with malaria. But the next on the list, this is the key, denominational preacher seminars. Denominational preacher seminars are designed to help teach denominational preachers the errors of the denomination, to try to bring them back to the church, simple truth of the New Testament, the authority of the New Testament, and it's had great response. And what happens when we are able to convert a denominational preacher? You think about the networking I just talked about with the men we work with. The same is true in denominations over in India. And so if we are able to convert one denominational preacher, we have access to a congregation. Not just to a congregation, but now we have access to his network. And if we are able to start converting them, you see how many congregations might be impacted by just the conversion of one. This has been the greatest part of our work, and it's been very successful. I want you to turn to the inside of the handout very quickly. Down near the bottom, it says a major strategy. We have targeted the conversion of denominational preachers. And since the beginning of this team's labor, a total of 45,000 plus denominational preachers have been converted. In India, we work with about 53,000 preachers. That's just a low estimate. Many of these men we've never met, but we work with some very closely, and through them, these, again, the network. But through these denominational preacher seminars, we have continued to be able to convert entire congregations in some cases. It's been very successful work. But if you go back to the front side of the handout, just under the list of works, you see all results. Since 1979, we've had this team of American and Indian preachers, again, over 50,000 of them, and just a few of us. We have conducted over 5 million gospel meetings, and those are just the ones we have reported, with a result of over 10 million souls that have been brought to Christ. 10 million sounds like a large number. And I know that not just here in a small town of San Antonio or in this state. You think how big a number 10 million really is. But I'm going to give you some facts, and you need to turn back to the inside of the handout at the very top. Now, this is an older statistic. It says there are more than 1.27 billion people in India. That number is now 1.4 billion with a B. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people to be reached. India is the world's second largest nation by population, seventh largest nation in the world by landmass. It is the world's largest democracy. It has the third or fourth largest standing military. There's a lot of people. A lot of people that need to be reached. And the great thing is, we don't have to knock doors. We don't have to beg anybody to let us come and try to speak to them. I cannot go stand on a street corner and preach. That's illegal. I can go any place somebody asks me to come and they invite me to speak. I can do that with no problem. I cannot baptize anybody personally. That's a problem. But we have plenty of our Indian brethren who do all this work. But India is a large nation. And I'm sorry, my wife is trying to very secretly signal me. I have a photo album I wanted to pass around. I want you to look at this while I'm talking. It's not very many pages, just 15 pages. Just to show you some of the work that we have going on right now. When you look at the statistics, now here is one of our biggest problems. And somebody asked me here tonight if I spoke the language. I think it was you. No, I don't speak the language. India does not have a language. India has languages, and there are a lot of them. Now, India has two national languages. Those are Hindi and English. My wife speaks both, and she speaks them both fluently. The problem is reading. She can read. She can't write. It's very, very difficult to remember everything. But then when you travel from state to state, so I know we're very close to the Ohio state line, correct?
Yes.
So you skip over from here to Ohio, imagine having to learn another language. Or going over to Pennsylvania, going down to Kentucky, Tennessee, and then Alabama, and having to learn another language every time you cross the state line. Now, I know down in Alabama they do speak a different language. If you go to Louisiana, it's really bad. But that's India. 29 states, and almost every single one of them is based on a language. Not politics. Language. So no, I have not learned the language. The government has given special status to 25 different languages. They officially recognize 845 and over 1,600 languages and dialects unofficially. I did try to learn Telugu, which is the state-level language of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. This is one of the first times a state has been split up into two parts or in two separate states without language being an issue. They both speak Telugu. This is my wife's third language. I tried to learn it and just found very quickly that there are sounds in the Indian languages the American tongue has a very difficult time making. So I gave up. But when you look at the list of states that's there on the inside, you will see that those with the asterisk beside them, those are places where we have worked. I have been to most of these states, but then below this, the team members. I just want to cover this very quickly. I mentioned my parents. Now, my father passed away in March of this year. And with that, Robert Hall, who had joined us originally in 2001, but he stepped back from the India work due to health reasons. He has severe celiac disease. Traveling and eating while he was traveling was very detrimental to his health. And so he stepped back for a while. But now that things are much more widely available, when my father passed away, Robert stepped back in immediately. And so Robert has rejoined our work. Then Renegar from Fayetteville, Tennessee, joined us in 2004. This year, since my father passed away, we have been joined now by two other couples, people that have worked in India actually for years and years. Both of them, Bill Evans, his wife Diane, and Steve Snyder, who is actually from here in West Virginia, I met them both for the first time while I was in India in 1993. So yes, they've been involved with India for a long, long time. They have, Bill and Diane, they've done their own work for a number of years. And we have talked and talked and talked. Bill and I are great friends. And we have been trying to get him for years to come and just join us and join our work together. And with my father passing away and the realization that things are changing to an extent, he has agreed. And so we are glad that they have made that official. Steve Snyder has made the announcement he is joining us. It won't be become official until next month. But he has joined us this year also. But I want you to look down to the next paragraph, the ideal for our work. Going back to the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 to 20, Jesus said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you. And Lord, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age." Amen. That's our basis right there. When we look at our ideal, the first step is we do teach. Whether it's I go to a gospel meeting at night or I'm teaching in a class during the day, whatever the work is, we're teaching. And through our 3-month program, our 2-year program, the mobile Bible school, through the denominational preacher seminars, the Haslam Fulford Memorial Preacher's Lectureship, we're teaching. Now, what I didn't mention about the KCMBI is a class that I have been teaching now for about 7 years. There in Hyderabad, we have about 35 men that come to our facility. We rent an entire building, 4-story apartment building. And we have a church that meets there, actually 3 different worship services every Sunday. English, Tamil and Telugu, the three different languages. And they all come to one building three different times of the day, and we have our worship service. And so, in the same building, we have classes. Anytime we need special meetings, we have the facility available for that. And so, I teach 2 days a week, Mondays and Tuesdays in the afternoon at what we call Kondapur, that's the section of the city, and I teach there in Hyderabad. So we are teaching. Going by the Great Commission, we baptize, and then we teach them some more. We train. That's our second teaching. But those who are going to be preachers, those who want to be evangelists, we have to trust them. That's our third teaching. And for them to do this work, we have to turn them loose. We cannot be standing over their shoulders. We can't be watching them every day. These men do the bulk of the work, and they have to. Simply because, number one, there's a whole lot more of them than there are of us. Secondly, it's their languages, it's their families, their friends, their villages, their culture. All of these reasons show why the Indian Brethren have to be the main part of this work. We can only do so much ourselves. And so our strategy, again, is going to the denominations, trying to reach them and convert denominational preachers. But there is also the fact that India is about 75% Hindu. We are able to convert Hindus. It doesn't happen every day. It's a much more difficult process. But if you look at the bottom paragraph of this page, this is why the people of India are so receptive. Number one, they are very religious people. It doesn't matter what they believe, they are religious. Secondly, those obeying the gospel are the poorest of the poor. We don't go to the wealthy. We don't go to the high and mighty. We don't go to the movers and shakers. We go to the common man. When you look in the scriptures, that's exactly who Jesus went to. He went to the common man. Again, the reason is, there's a whole lot of them. If you compare the wealthy to the poor in India, you've got a very, like maybe 5% of the people of India would be considered really wealthy. 75% of the people of India live at or below the poverty line. That fact alone tells us that there's a lot of people we can reach. But third, India is the home of the greatest restoration movement of our time. Not just in the Lord's church. People trying to turn away from Hinduism, even turning away from Islam, coming to some kind of a faith in Christ. There was a study. It's called the Joshua Project. Several years ago, I can't remember the name of the person who was involved in this or the people who were involved in this. They said that people were turning away from Hinduism millions every year, turning to some kind of a belief in Jesus Christ. Millions. Well, that does present a problem with an Indian, very Hindu government, because they don't want their people turning away from Hinduism. And so there have been issues with the government. And that is one of the reasons why we do not advertise. We try to have all of our meetings indoors, especially in a church building, but even in somebody's home. We don't go out on the street, because we don't want to draw more attention to us. But as long as we are invited to speak, they can't do anything to us. So number four, again, millions leaving Hinduism every year, but this is part of the reason why. The oppressive caste system. Now, oppression is something that's talked about a great deal here in America, racism and all of that. I want to tell you something, you have no idea what racism is like until you've been to India. And I know what you're thinking. They're all dark-skinned people. How can there be racism? Oh, no. There are a lot of different races in India. When you talk about the three basic types of people on the planet, the Aryans, the Dravidians, and the Orientals, India has all three. And in many parts of the country, they don't like each other at all. But the caste system, if you look historically, the caste system was based on the color of one's skin. The lighter the skin color, the higher they probably were on this totem pole of the caste system. The darker you were, the lower you were, and the really dark were almost what we would consider the outcast. An outcast, if you ever watch the movie Gandhi, it has a great example of some of this. and teaches a little bit about it, but they were called the Hadadans, the children of God. The Hadadans are the outcasts. They do not fit within the Hindu caste system. They are not allowed to enter into a village, the main part of the village. They may not enter into a temple. They may not draw water from the same well as those of the upper caste. And so they were forced to live outside the villages. And so you go to one village and you're going to find little communities around it, little satellite villages. And the churches that we help work with are very strong in those little sub-villages. But that's just part of it. There is a great deal of work, and a great deal of work that can be done. Go back to the front side of the handout, second paragraph from the bottom, the effect of the American evangelist. Indians love movies. I don't know if you've ever heard this or not. Indians love cinema. We think America puts out more movies than anywhere in the world. No, we don't. India is actually the world's largest movie maker. Did you know that? And it's the largest because they may make one movie and it's originally in Hindi, but then they will dub it into state languages. And each of those is considered another movie. But then they make their own state-level movies as well, state-language movies. And so, when America makes movies and we bring our movies over to India, oh, they flock to them. You'd be surprised. It is funny to see an American movie or a poster on the wall of an American actor for some movie, but all the posters in television. And it's like, oh, great, they're, 'cause the voices they use can be really funny. You know, a squinty Bruce Willis just doesn't work. Okay? But they love the movie. But they love America. They see on these movies, of course, the American dream. They think, oh, this is what America's really like. Okay, maybe not. But they love America. They love America. They look at Americans, they see us as well-educated. They see us as rich. Because if we compare our lives to the majority of India, we are very wealthy by comparison. And so they look up to us as the educated, they look to us as the wealthy, they look to us as angels, almost. When we go to villages, and in many cases they've never seen a foreigner before, I have been to a village where I got there pretty late, and way back when the electrical system was not always reliable. We got there and it was pitch black. And Sony and I, somebody had brought out a lantern and they just told me and Sony to sit on this little bench right outside the wall of the house and just on the street. Can't see anything. Sony is not 2 feet from me. I know she's there. We're talking. I can't see her. But I can feel somebody else. Because there's breath on my face, and Sony's on this side. There was a boy about 14 years old, and he was literally right there. He'd never seen a white man before, except on a screen. He just wanted to see me. You don't know what kind of an impact that is until you experience it yourself. But they love Americans. They consider us to be experts. And so when we leave this place, what they consider to be a wealthy nation, to go to the poverty, impoverished places of India, they respect it. They respect it greatly. They want to hear what we have to say. And what has helped us also is the fact that although when India gained its independence from Britain in 1947, the literacy rate may have been about 40%. The literacy rate is climbing greatly. But you're looking at people who were converted to a denomination, unable to read the Bible for themselves. They just listened to what they were told, and they accepted it. Now they have children going to school, learning how to read, or sometimes now grandchildren going to school, learning how to read. And they want the Bible read to them. And they are discovering that's not what this church teaches. And when they see that we are teaching what the Bible teaches, they really do listen. And so that has helped us tremendously in just converting people. Because when we come along, they said, this is what I've been reading about. They listen. They pay attention. They accept that because that was the Word of God. And so this work in India has grown tremendously. And there's just so many aspects of it, I really wish I could talk about it all. But we could be here all night. How you can help. Prayers are the easiest thing you can do. And they do help. We ask prayers for the work that's going on in India right now. As I mentioned earlier, our brother Prasad, we have worked with him for a number of years. His father also is a preacher. We're coming into that stage where we're now having some second and some third generation preachers that we work with. And it's just been very inspiring to see how he left a good job. He was a college professor teaching physics. He's not a stupid man. And he left that to work with us, working in our office, preaching in his home congregation. He does a lot of campaign work. He travels with us as a translator. He's just a really great young man. And so he is just one of many examples. If you've seen the photo album or will see it, here's our biggest problem right now. The same problem that was already mentioned, and that's COVID. Last year, through 2020, and so far this year, we estimate we've lost about 1,000 preachers. That's a very difficult number to set. 1,000. We are in the drive right now trying to help preachers, their widows, their families, in whatever way we can to get through COVID. Now, we are thankful that everything right now is on a downturn. For the, you know, going for the best, and we're great. We're thankful for it. That doesn't mean it's over. And we all, I think, if we're realistic, we know it's not over here either. But that means, at the same time, we are right now trying to raise enormous amounts of money just to help preachers and their families, whether they are affected by not being able to work, not just with their congregation, but many of our preachers have to have some other job to provide for their family. We're trying to help them survive. We're trying to help widows. We're trying to help preachers who have lost their wives or their children. And so it is a humongous effort right now. It's simply trying to help people. That doesn't include all the other works that we're involved in. Our schools have been shut down. We made sure that was not going to be an issue. We closed them so that there was nobody trying to transmit a disease within our school. The Karen Primary School that's listed there, that school also, just like any other public school or government school, has been shut down. And so, yes, we have had some obstacles. But with things getting better, people are getting back to work. Our preachers are getting back to work. And so you will see in the photo album exactly that. We have our men already getting back to work, and we're thankful for it. Right now, with our team, my mother is still greatly involved in this work. Now, her job here is mostly just corresponding with people in the U.S., people in India. She is at a computer doing email constantly. That was when my dad was in the States, it was the same thing. Just constant communication. Since my father passed away and things are now turning to me and to Robert and Ben, it's constant communication. We are always having messages to and from India. But we are waiting right now for the gates of India to reopen. Our plan is that once we are able to re-enter India, all of us are going to go at one time. We have decided we're not going to fly on the same plane, just in case. But we are planning all to go within a very short period of time. We want to have a meeting with all of our team leaders, as we call them, over in India. We want to make sure that they are assured this work and their support for their part in this work is going to continue. of course, by now, they know that we're still helping because we're still sending money to India. So they know that we're supporting the work, that we're involved in this work. But I think just for them to see us face to face is going to make a world of difference for them. And so we are looking forward to being able to do that. Of course, we're hoping that would be by the end of this year, but I'm not keeping my fingers crossed. It'll happen when it happens. But we are still trying right now to the best of our ability, to be able to help India. But we need your help. I know you're involved in other work, and we're not asking you to take away anything from anybody. As individuals, I'm not asking you to take away anything that you give to the congregation here. This is your first responsibility. What I am asking is that you might go above and beyond what you might normally give. Now, inside the handout, there was also an insert. Anyone who wants to give anything to help our work today, cash, check, credit card on the back, sell a child, whatever. Anything would be greatly appreciated. Please fill this out with your name and address. We want to give credit where credit is due. We'll start sending you our newsletter that will continue to give you information about the work that we do. If you have any questions, very quickly, before we leave, just let me know. I want to answer your questions. Anybody? I did good? All right. Thank you. If you would like to receive a newsletter by email, please put your email address on there. That saves us postage. Now, I know that's not a big deal to you, but when there's a 15,000 pieces of mail going out every month, it adds up. But we do ask that if you would like to help us from time to time, it would be wonderful. I want to thank you for giving me your attention, for letting me be with you this evening. Again, any help you can give us would be wonderful. But I do look forward to an opportunity. I could come back and give you a better update. I would love to be able to stand up before you sometime and say, COVID is gone. And I know all of us would love to hear that even here. But we do appreciate you allowing us to be with you this evening. We appreciate the welcome. And for Kyle, thank you for giving up the pulpit a little bit this evening. And but do keep us in prayer. Keep our work in prayer because we desperately need it. Thank you very much.